From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, the State Assembly introduces a bill to permit voluntary public financing of some election campaigns. Our political observer Alan Shartok will share his thoughts on the bill, and we'll have an update on hydraulic fracturing in the state. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The State Assembly introduced a bill this week to permit for the first time in New York voluntary public financing of some election campaigns. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
The Assembly bill would offer an optional public financing system for campaigns for state legislative and statewide offices, giving candidates $6 for every $1 in contributions. It would be financed in part through a $5 checkoff option on state income taxes. Bill Mahoney with the New York Public Interest Research Group says it's a good first step.
It's certainly a good start. We would like to see more in a final bill. This bill, for example, only regulates candidates who choose to opt into a system and doesn't change anything like contribution limits or enforcement for candidates who don't decide to opt in. And it doesn't include anything regulating the fundraising of political parties.
Governor Cuomo listed public campaign financing as a goal in his State of the State message this year. He says he hopes to pursue the issue with legislative leaders during the final 2 months of the legislative session.
I support campaign finance. I've been pushing it very hard all throughout the session. And we have a few weeks left, and I'm hopeful that we get something done.
But Cuomo says he won't be introducing his own bill right now. He says to do that without prior agreement from the legislature would just be a PR stunt.
You can take the public relations track of appearing to do something, and I can put out my bill and rant and rave about it, or I can actually try to get something done. And I'm trying to actually get something done. And that means working with the parties who have different opinions and coming up with an agreement that we can all live with and that we can actually pass and make a reality. And that's what I'm trying to do.
Cuomo says he'll publicly release legislation only if he can't win agreement with lawmakers. Mahoney with NYPERC says he hopes the governor follows through. He says Cuomo listed three major reform goals during his campaign for governor: ethics reform, redistricting reform, and campaign finance reform. Mahoney says the governor scored with an ethics agreement in 2011, but struck out this year when it came to redistricting, agreeing to a plan that permitted gerrymandered districts.
In our opinion, he's currently batting 500, and if he wants to end the session with a winning record for his reform proposals, he should certainly continue what he started at his State of the State and push to make this happen this year.
Republicans who are in charge in the state Senate have been reluctant to sign on to public campaign financing, saying that taxpayers don't want to fund candidates that they might not agree with and would rather contribute directly. Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver said recently that he will also be introducing an alternative measure that will offer public campaign financing for just the state controller's race as a test case and as a compromise that perhaps the Senate could accept.
We have our own bill that covers all offices. We also have controller as a pilot bill, and we're willing to put them both out there and see which one the Senate would be more palatable to the Senate to begin the system.
The Assembly's campaign finance reform bill is set to be taken up in committee later in the week. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. And Alan, this week the governor finally addressed all the speculation about whether he'd run for president in 2016. He said he's flattered but distracted immediately. Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver said he thought Secretary of State, former First Lady, and Senator from New York Hillary Clinton would make a good candidate, but he also said Cuomo was a great Democrat who was a potential leader.
So Cuomo is distracted. Cuomo is distracted from his regular duties by thinking, he says, I can't be distracted by thinking about the president. Yeah, not more than every single second of every single minute of every single day. That's my bet. You know, he's doing what he always does. Why in the world would you say, I'm interested? And no, that's not the way you play it. The other day he was quoted as saying his father, quote, peaked too early. And clearly that was saying, at least to me, if he peaked too early, I'm running too, but I'm not going to peak too early by making that statement. What I'm fascinated by are the politicians who are risking his wrath. For example, Kirsten Gillibrand, who, you know, is a woman who absolutely knows what she's doing. I've had her on the show here many times. And so when she came out and said the other day, I'm the first person to sign on to the Hillary for president in 2016, I wanted to be the fly on the wall in Andrew's room as he talked to his girlfriend and said, you know, I'll make a phone call right now. I bet there was a phone call, but... And then Shelley Silver, who is the smartest politician I think around and has survived this incredible amount of time, and he comes out and he does the same thing. He says, basically, Hillary for president in 2016, and then he says, oh, yeah, and by the way, Andrew's good, too. Well, that's not good enough for Andrew, I can tell you that.
All right, let's go to some of the major issues in the session, whether they'll be dealt with or not. We don't know at this point, but the State Assembly introduced a bill this week to permit for the first time in New York voluntary public financing of some election campaigns. Cuomo doesn't seem too warm to their idea, or at least that it will be accomplished this session.
D, period. O, period. A, period. Dead on arrival. A bunch of very wealthy people, David Rockefeller and some other people, all good government and wonderful people, came out and said there should be campaign financing. And I certainly agree with that because, you know, right now the golden rule, those who have the gold rule is in effect. And now with Citizens United and anybody, corporations or people, you know, no wonder the 1% controls the 99% because they keep making these rules that make it possible to happen. So the state Senate, where the Republicans are in control by a few votes, they're going to say, we're not for this for one reason or another. Now, Dean Skelos is a very bright politician, says the people would never permit it to have their money used in this way. This is taxpayer money. After all, we're not going to let taxpayers pay for elections. Well, there used to be this guy on television. I don't know what was his name either. Mr. Goodwrench or John R. Arbuckle, one of those guys. And he used to say, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. Meaning fix the car now or when it really gets bad, you know, you're going to pay me. Well, that's the same thing with campaign financing. Obviously, if everybody has a square shot and all the rest of it, then the Democrats, because they have less money, and not only Democrats, but a lot of people who don't have any money. After all, remember what this program is. It's modeled on New York City, where you have to raise a certain amount of money to get it matched. Well, you know, even there, John Schlupp can't come off the street and say, give me some money to run for office, because it takes money to get money like that. So it's DOA. It's not going to happen. Andrew Cuomo, I just should say, has shown signs that he likes working with the Republicans in the state Senate, and here he is, a conservative governor. So he doesn't want to do that. Shelley Silver says he wants it. I don't know, because, you know, he got where he is under the old system, not the new one. But that's what he says, and you got to respect him. And every once in a while, they pass a bill like that.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Legislation pending in the New York State Legislature would set the responsibility to train and credential volunteer search and rescue personnel to the Department of Environmental Conservation Forest Rangers. More from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
A bill has been introduced in the state Senate by Senator Betty Little and in the Assembly by William McGee to give the authority for training and credentialing search and rescue volunteers to state forest rangers. Senator Little says with only 112 forest rangers, the agency must rely on properly trained volunteers to aid in searches.
It's necessary because it allows for specific training programs within the forest rangers, and they certainly know what they're doing and know how to train people. And also, when they reach out to these volunteers or these volunteers from these clubs who are all trained come forward to help in a search and rescue, that the liability would be covered, similar to how a volunteer firefighter who comes in and fights a state forest fire is covered.
New York State Federation of Search and Rescue Teams Chairman Roger Fox notes that while forest rangers have been training search and rescue volunteers for over 40 years, this legislation would codify programs and provide credentialing to align with a federal framework.
Over the last 3 or 4 years, the forest rangers have done a very good job of altering their training to be consistent with some of the federal requirements. So they're not really creating a program. Most of the program is out there. But what we need is a single agency that can say, okay, here's the types of training you need. Here's where you can get it. Here's how we're going to credential you for this particular type of job. And that's really what we're looking at here. And the good thing is that then creates resources that they can use, and it can also be used locally for certain types of incidents.
Senator Betty Little says she was not aware of the intensity of backcountry searches until she observed them.
I think I even thought you just go walking through the woods looking around and trying to find someone, and that's not the case. There's a very specific way of going about it and marking off an area that has been searched so that you don't duplicate it. They were walking through water and climbing over trees. You look for everything, every little tiny piece of evidence that you could find. A broken branch, you know, that maybe someone broke off, might be evidence of the person having been through there. Footprints, disruptions in the moss or the ground. So there's a lot to it.
This is not just a casual endeavor.
Roger Fox says search and rescue teams are being called upon more often, and the credentialing of volunteers is critical.
There's an awful, awful lot of work and training and commitment. Not a casual endeavor at all. I always tell people there's nothing like standing out, you know, knee-deep in water in a swamp at 3 o'clock in the morning watching your breath freeze and sitting there saying, gee, why am I really out here? Well, I know why I'm out here, because somebody else is out here and they need our help. That's just the environment we work in, and they need to be ready to do that.
The proposed legislation does not authorize any funding for training and credentialing. According to the Senate bill, the New York State DEC conducts about 225 search and rescue efforts annually in wild, remote, and forested areas of the state.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Lawmakers and lobbyists say communities that have been supportive of hydraulic fracturing are likely to be among the first areas of New York to get approval if the State Department of Environmental Conservation allows the technique. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
The DEC has been involved in establishing ground rules for permitting hydrofracking throughout New York State since 2008. The agency's review of the process and recommendations are eagerly awaited by individuals and entities on both sides of the issue. Those most involved in lobbying for or against the process have been hearing for some time now that the DEC is leaning toward allowing fracking in areas where it hasn't met much resistance, and in some communities near the New York, Pennsylvania border. John Armstrong, Communications Director of Frack Action, expresses doubt.
I would actually question the very premise of this rumor, having spent a considerable amount of time working on this issue in the southern tier and parts of the state where the Marcellus Shale is most prevalent. This rumor is false. There are not areas that really want hydraulic fracturing. There's a small, vocal minority of landowners and industry stakeholders who stand to make a considerable amount of money, potentially, if fracking were to go forward, while the rest of us, the majority of citizens in those areas included, actually do not want fracking. Having gone door-to-door in areas of the Southern Tier, I can tell you that 70, 80, 90% of the people in those areas do not want fracking.
Binghamton-based Republican Senator Thomas Leibus, who supports gas drilling, told the Press and Sun Bulletin that the state may ultimately focus on regions that haven't shown opposition to hydrofracking. He was unavailable for further comment. Sue Rapp is with Vestal Residents for Safe Energy in Broome County.
There are residents who wish to lease for gas drilling for personal profit. However, the leasing groups represent less than 10% of the population in any town. We think that most people do not want gas drilling, and we are the constituents of Thomas Leibus. We wonder where he's getting his information from. In working with Verse, going door to door in Vestal, we have found a majority of residents that we have spoken to are worried about gas drilling. They're concerned about the jeopardy to their health, to their quality of life, to their home mortgages, to the air and noise pollution. They're worried about truck traffic, and they're worried about their investments in their homes going down the drain if gas drilling is allowed. They don't want to live in an industrialized area. People have said to me, we don't want to be the sacrifice zone for gas drilling, which it seems like Senator Leibus is offering us. We feel as his constituents, he's not listening to us.
Rapp points out there's been a flurry of anti-fracking petitioning in many towns across the Southern Tier. DEC Director of Public Information Emily DeSantis responded to a request for comment by email stating, quote, under the draft SGEIS, if a local government does not feel the applicant's plan is consistent with land use and local zoning laws, the municipality can raise a flag with DEC. If high-volume hydraulic moves forward in New York, local governments will get advance notice of all applications and can comment on compatibility of such application with local land use laws and policies. DEC will consider this in its review of the permit application and can deny or condition a permit based on this information if it deems such action is appropriate based on the impacts.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Earlier this year, Governor Andrew Cuomo said one of his top priorities is to create an energy highway for New York State's aging power grid. So what exactly does that mean? Well, as the Innovation Trail's Marie Cusick reports, no one is quite sure yet.
New York's Capital Region is well known as a place where stuff can get stuck, whether it's a bill that gets stalled in a committee at the Capitol or cars piling up in a traffic jam during the morning commute. But the area around Albany is also known as a congestion spot for something invisible, the power that runs through the state's electric grid. When electricity from upstate moves toward power-hungry New York City, it gets clogged along the way due to the age and physical limitations of the transmission lines. It happens in places like Utica, Albany, and southward down the Hudson Valley. In his State of the State address back in January, Governor Andrew Cuomo said he wants to change that.
We have supply of power in northern New York, Quebec. We have power supply in western New York. We have a tremendous need for power in downstate New York. Let's connect the dots.
The governor says he wants to do for the state's power grid what President Eisenhower did for America's highway system. It's an ambitious goal, but the details remain vague. A promotional video on the state's website features sweeping shots of New York City's lights and workers in hard hats.
The New York Energy Highway. The time for powerful ideas.
The state is looking for those ideas to come from private companies that could make suggestions about policy changes, construct new power plants and transmission lines, and update old infrastructure.
If we want the state to develop, and we need the jobs, and we need the businesses, we're going to need the power, and this is the way we're going to do it.
But no one really knows just how they're going to do it yet. Nearly 5 months after that speech, the planning stages are just getting underway. Gil Quiñones heads the New York Power Authority and serves on the governor's Energy Highway Task Force. Even he's not sure how the plans will take shape yet.
It's too early to tell.
That's because the Energy Highway isn't really one grand idea. It will likely be a lot of projects, both big and small. The idea is to build on existing rights of way, says Quiñones, and that means transmission lines could run along railroad tracks, down the Hudson River, or even under the busy thruway.
It could be underground, underwater, or within the corridors where we already have existing energy infrastructure.
But one big unknown is the future of the Indian Point nuclear power plant, which generates about a quarter of New York City's electricity. The licenses for its reactors will expire soon, and Governor Cuomo wants to shut it down. Department of Environmental Conservation Chief Joe Martens, who also sits on the Energy Highway Task Force, says the state needs to seek alternatives.
This initiative is looking for ways to replace the power that we can reasonably anticipate is going to be lost for whatever reason, whether it's because Indian Point isn't relicensed or a plant just retires because it's old.
Earlier this month, the task force held two forums in the New York City area, which attracted representatives from more than 300 different companies. Proposals from those companies are due to the task force by the end of May and will then be used to develop a broader action plan for the state, which is expected out later this summer.
That's the Innovation Trail's Marie Cusick reporting. Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between five upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1217. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.